You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What is good, everybody? Welcome to Under Review on the Gold Standard Podcast Network. I'm Rob Stats Guerrera. He's Vish Kumar. And Vish, Monday evening, 5:15 Pacific time, and it's official. The Zach What's Wilson official? 49ers rumors can officially be laid to rest because we have a backup quarterback, and it is not Zach Wilson. It is the Pastronaut.
Yeah, I thought this was a good signing. I think he's the perfect kind of guy that can play in a pinch. I don't think that he necessarily prevents them from drafting a guy either. Maybe drafting a guy, I thought about it because I was always of the mindset, draft a guy, keep Brandon Allen, and then make that guy your backup. Maybe that was too optimistic of a mindset. There's no guarantee a sixth or seventh round quarterback is even going to make your roster. So this allows that guy, if need be, you can put him on your practice squad if he's a guy you believe in, but maybe he's not ready this year. It puts less pressure on that draft pick. I would still draft a quarterback, but I think it's a good signing, and I think we feel a lot better about his ability to play in a pinch as opposed to Zach Wilson, Brandon Allen, or even a rookie quarterback in the case that, you know, the terrible case that Brock Purdy gets hurt.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing that Josh Dobbs sort of specializes in, it's being able to play on short notice and fill in situations. I mean, on August 24th, he was on the Browns. He got traded to the Cardinals and then ended up as the Cardinals starter for the season on September 24th. So, yeah. Okay. Then later in the season, he gets traded to the Vikings. And then Jaren Hall gets hurt. Dobbs has to come into the game. He hadn't taken a single practice rep for the Vikings. They were going over his cadence with the offensive lineman on the sidelines during the game. Yep. But he is a smart guy. They call him the Pastronaut, obviously, because, you know, he studied, aerospace engineering, I think, at Tennessee. Guy is smart. He's going to fit in perfectly in San Francisco.
Yeah, 100%. And what I like about him is what you described, right? He's an adult. He's been through some pretty interesting life experiences in the NFL, dealing with getting cut, dealing with getting signed immediately. You brought up the Tennessee instance where he's cut immediately. He's signed. He's starting on Thursday Night Football. I'm not saying that that makes him the best quarterback, but it shows that he has the character and the poise to be able to deal with things as they happen in stride and be able to still handle himself the correct way. And I think that's really important when you're talking about a backup quarterback, because you're talking about a guy that's often put in a position where he has to come in chaos. And I think that's what makes Josh Dobbs such a perfect signing for them. And I've been somewhat opposed to them handing out guaranteed money on these 1-year deals to backup quarterbacks. And that was because I didn't like the Sudfeld deal. Like, Darnold was fine, but again, I didn't necessarily love Darnold in a situation that he would have to come. No matter what you say, Rob, I didn't love Darnold in a situation that he comes in and had to operate in that kind of chaos. Dobbs is a little bit different to me because I thought at points last year, he actually showed that he could be one of 32. And I think that's a little bit different. I guess maybe Darnold has shown the talent to be that, same with Wilson, but yeah, both have really struggled in the NFL. And so that's where Josh Dobbs is a little bit different, and I'm happy he's the Niners' backup.
The best part of this is what M. Patel just said. Thank God it wasn't Wilson. Like, no. Zach Wilson? No. I did a whole live show this afternoon, just basically like, what the hell is Kyle Shanahan doing? You know, he's got a type. Some people like blondes with long legs. Kyle Shanahan likes blondes drafted high that flamed out, apparently. But we don't have to go there now.
I was waiting for that conversation because you know what was so interesting about that? I think that if you go back to the 2021 draft, right, everybody heard conflicting information from a lot of different people who thought this, who thought that, who thought this, creating the kind of cesspool that was how people were reporting and talking about and discussing that draft pick. But the one constant I feel like everybody heard that nobody could ever like confirm or lay down was that,
yep,
Shanahan were in on this guy. This was the apple of the eye. This was the quarterback one, but yes, the Jets saw that they were going to take him too. Like, this was the dream. I wanted some more information on that. There was a selfish part of me that wanted to see Shanahan's post-game presser or post-trade presser, excuse me, after he traded for a Zach Wilson to see how he would talk about his talent. Because you know why also? Because a lot of those things were said about Sam Darnold for 2 years when the Niners were so heavily rumored to trade for him. And people were like, no, Kyle Shanahan doesn't actually like him. These people are just saying things. Adam Schefter is making this up, that up, this up. And we spent an entire offseason of Kyle Shanahan basically talking about Sam Darnold like he was the greatest prospect in the history of mankind. Right. And he raised his salary by $8 million in a year. And so I would have loved to have seen that play out with Zach Wilson. I liked Zach Wilson before the draft, so I still think Zach Wilson has some talent. There's some bias for me with Zach Wilson as opposed to Sam Darnold, who I didn't like. But either way, Josh Dobbs is a better option than both, and that's who they have.
Yeah, everybody thought that Shanahan liked Zach Wilson the most in that draft. We know that the Niners called the Jets and tried to trade up to number two, and they couldn't get that. I remember they said they called every team, and three was as high as they could get that year. And I do wonder... You're right, because in that post-game presser, Kyle would have said, well, I actually like Wilson even more than I like Trey Lance that year. That would have come out.
Right, but, and there were a lot of Steve Young, Zach Wilson, 49er comments, connections, all of it, yeah.
Yeah, well, guess what? Sorry, Zach. Go back to being reckless with the football, you terrible disaster of a pro quarterback. You ain't it.
Wow. That is harsh, but I know that you're really scared of the Rams. With the news that came down this weekend, speaking of quarterbacks that you share a
similar hold on. We're not going to the Rams yet. We all know Jimmy Garoppolo's on the Rams.
See, of course. You went to the weekend news and you didn't even go to Aaron Donald retiring. You went to Jimmy Garoppolo signing to the Rams.
No, you went to Jimmy Garoppolo retiring.
I never said what I was going to. I just went to big news for the Rams this weekend.
I want to talk about this. I want to make another point about the Dobbs thing because he signs for 1 year, $2.25 million with $750,000 in playing time incentives. Mm-hmm. This is the contract you give a backup quarterback, not what the 49ers gave to Sam Darnold, like we said last year when he was signed. It was always more than just being a backup with Darnold because they didn't know about Purdy. This is a backup quarterback contract. And I like this comment from Golden Dragon number 5. Josh Dobbs makes almost 3 times more than Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
It's funny because it's true.
And you know what the crazy part is? We would probably argue that Josh Dobbs is the most comfortable backup that the 49ers have given guaranteed money to at this point in the last 3 years, right? Because they didn't have Garoppolo in 2022 at that point, or they had him, but we were thinking they were going to trade him, and they gave Sudfeld $3 million fully guaranteed. I think Darnold got 3.5. Dobbs is only getting 2 point something, which is interesting to me because how the hell, who negotiated $3 million fully guaranteed for Nate Sudfeld?
I don't know, but that's the other thing too, is what this move says is like, this is what you do when you have an established starter, right? There's no threat to Brock Purdy here. There's no no one's like, I think Josh Dobbs is going to be QB1. There's the Brock Purdy trolls out there that say, whenever the 49ers are rumored to get a quarterback, they always say, well, better than Brock Purdy. Those are not serious people. This is exactly what you should do if you're the 49ers. Yes, you have a backup that could maybe win a game, but he's not applying any pressure to the starter. He's an incredibly smart guy who may be able to help out Brock, you know, behind the scenes. This is what you do when you have your quarterback in place. Not all the craziness and the friggin' drama that we've had from this organization at that spot for like 5 years in a row.
And he's played in a lot of different systems. He's played for a lot of different teams.
Mm-hmm.
He's veteran. He's a pro. He's mature. I used to never account for the real life in all of that, in all of this, Rob, just because it's like, who cares? Is they're playing football? But as I am being an adult and realizing how difficult it is to manage the real life with my profession, that stuff actually means a lot more to me, because I totally understand for an NFL player, like even now, right, we're projecting a million, we're projecting like a 200, 300 players now in the draft, right? And what nobody really discusses at the end of the day is how much can they figure out going from college to becoming a real professional with $1 million in their back pocket has to do with them actually succeeding or not succeeding on the football field. But whether they do or don't will have to do with most of the time just football reasons, and that's how the narrative will be told. And Josh Dobbs being able to pivot through all of those different life situations in the NFL and still maintain his career, I think is important. Whereas a guy like Darnold, you know, I don't know that he could have gone through what Dobbs went through. He's gotten three different starting opportunities back to back to back. Dobbs was out of the league for a portion in between.
Yeah, the comeback that Josh Dobbs made has been pretty friggin' amazing, frankly, and deserves a lot of credit. You mentioned to me before we went on the air that you got that money in your pocket now, and you're having to manage life as an adult, getting promoted at work. Look at you.
No, I don't know about all of that, Rob. We don't need to be sharing some personal information.
Don't be modest. Things are going good for Vish Kumara. He's a baller. We know it. You got to the final four of the Media Madness tournament last year, I believe.
Yeah, and you know, it's such an awkward thing too to do that, because like I think last year in the first round, I'm going up against Mike Silver, and it's like, what am I going to do? Tell people to vote for a guy that I read and I rely upon for information? Be like, hey, guys, I also read this guy. I use this guy's information. I cite this guy's reporting, but vote for me instead of him. That's kind of crazy. So it's funny, the entire tournament format to me, it's so fun. It's such a great idea from you. But for me, it's just a whole lot of awkward, because it's like, of course I want people to vote for me, but it's like, I can't in good faith be like, hey, vote for me over this guy who I read. And you told me right before the show, because I just saw that you were doing this, that I'm going up against Rich. It's yes. The same thing with Rich. It's like, I can't in good faith be like, people vote for me instead of Rich. Obviously, I don't want Rich to beat me, but I can't in good faith do that because I rely upon Rich for information. I think Rich is fantastic.
There you are, Vish Kumaran, Rich Madrid in the 49ers Media Madness Tournament. You can go to our website, goldstandardniners.com, and vote for it for the next 3 days. The first round is 3 days. Go vote for it. Not now. This is our time. But eventually, after the show is over, go and check it out. We'll talk a little bit more about that later, Vish. I did want to also note real quick, there was a nugget in the column by the Athletic staff. It's Lombardi Barrels. I think that's the right article. You know the play in the Super Bowl where Jennings throws the touchdown to Christian McCaffrey? That was inspired by the Tennessee Volunteers, where Juwan Jennings threw a touchdown pass across the field to Josh Dobbs. That's the inspiration from that play came from. They also connected on a very famous Hail Mary for a game winner against Georgia,
where Juwan Jennings takes a hit.
Yeah. So, you know, Juwan's got to be pumped about this move.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Maybe not. Does that make him stay? Wow.
Well, he has to stay because he's restricted. Well, I guess technically that's the Niners' decision, but he's staying.
Jay Cruz 49er in the chat with the reference of the century here. Shout out to my bar, Charlie V, former Detroit Piston. I remember that trade.
Former UConn Husky. What are you talking about?
Most guys are most known for their time in Detroit, Rob. That's how the NBA works.
Jay Cruz says Charlie Villanueva is a better choice over Zach Doucheboy Wilson. That was a little harsh on Zach. Well, like, again, I criticize Zach Wilson as a player. I don't know him as a person, although he did have that whole thing where the Jets wanted him to come back and start, and then he supposedly said no, and then Aaron Rodgers like had to convince him to go. Remember that whole thing last year?
And then he
like,
played unbelievable, got concussed, and that was his season.
It was the it was
the weirdest thing. That was the best game I've ever seen him play in his life. Versus they blew out Houston, and he was throwing the ball like he was playing unreal.
I mean, he has arm talent, but that's his problem is from the neck up. Brother
and
Bob says
confidence. His confidence is just
He got shot.
Yeah.
Brother Bob says, when does voting open? It's open now, Brother Bob. You can go now. It started early to this morning. It's open now for the next 3 days. Yeah. It'll be the first round. Then we'll move on to round two. Hopefully, Vish will be moving on. No offense to you, Rich Madrid.
Started off early so Rob could spend Sunday putting in a few votes for Rob.
No.
I'm joking.
I've only voted for myself 5 or 6 times today. That's it. I promise. A lot of complaints I've gotten already. Al Sacco is not happy with me because he's going up against Croc in the first round. But like I told him, somebody's got to go up against Croc in the first round.
Right. That's an automatic loss for everybody. Didn't he steamroll everyone to win the title last year?
He billy clubbed everybody to win. It wasn't even close. He destroyed everybody. He destroyed Grant. He destroyed everybody. There is the full bracket if you're watching on the stream. 64 participants this year. I am so excited. It's gotten a lot of love on Twitter, which I really appreciate. I hope everybody has fun with it. I say it every show. I'm going to keep saying it. Again, this is not supposed to be like, haha, look who stinks. Look, it's just there are a ton of great 49ers content creators out there and people that cover the Niners out there that you might not know about, but they're out there and their work is good. And this is to get you exposed to some of the work that maybe you might not have come across yet. When you vote on the website, which it's a little easier if you're on an actual computer, it will work on your phone though. But if you click on the people, it'll take you to their Twitter page where you can go and check out their work and see where they're from. So you can learn about how they cover the 49ers and what they do. Some of the people on here do very specific things, like Jason Hurley does the 49ers cap. That he's all about the 49ers salary cap situation. So click on the person. If you haven't heard of them, that's good. Check them out, and hopefully you get to learn some new things.
Good stuff.
Like Vish
Kumaran. How long does it take you to put together, Rob?
Too long, but this is my job now, so it's okay.
How did you get to the 64 names? Was there a lot of controversy? Was the committee upset about a few snubs this year? Well, what's the word?
So here's the deal. I did a bad job last year. We had, I think, 48 last year. That wasn't nearly enough. I didn't think of it last year until like the tournament, the bracket was almost out, and so I kind of rushed it. And so I left people off that shouldn't have been left off. Like Haberman and Middlecoff weren't in it. Tracy Sandler wasn't in it. I did a bad job. So I tried to really include more people this year. I put out submission requests. If you wanted somebody in or you wanted yourself to be in, I threw it out on Twitter to let me know to try and get as many people as I could. I did 64, frankly, this year because that's the bracket. It's an easy bracket to make. I know it works. So we have 64. I don't think I'm going to expand to 68 like the real tournament. I think that's off the table. But, you know, I don't know if John Middlecoff is going to be in it next year because he's doing his own thing from Haberman now. I see.
Are they moving from the Big Ten to the SEC? There's a deal for John Middlecoff over there.
They're split up now. So this could be his last. But then I'll put somebody else in, you know, we'll swap somebody out. So it'll all work out.
I see.
So okay, hopefully
it's good.
Yes. Go and vote. There's some really interesting matchups. Larry Kruger has Sour Death Sam in the first round. I'm fascinated to see how that turns out. Two very different types of show right there. Who are you voting for?
Rob, you never kiss and tell.
Oh, boy. What a wimp. All right. The other thing we have to talk about.
Won't vote, to be honest.
Oh, don't be that guy.
Well, what am I supposed to do? Okay, there's some of those I looked on there already, and it's like I'm going to feel guilty whomever I vote for. Then I will feel some type of way if I vote for myself, but I can't vote for Rich because I won't vote against myself either because I'll feel some type of way if I vote against myself. So I'm just going to stick around and watch the results and watch you go through getting hopefully a couple of, hey, Rob, like, just maybe, you know, a funny couple of funny things in your Twitter mentions that I can read and bookmark for later to read.
I have no shot because even if I'm lucky enough to beat Kyle Madsen in round one, whether it's Jennifer Lee Chan or Chase Sr., there's no way I'm getting out of round two. No way.
Rob? I heard you're a Cinderella team this year.
I don't think so.
I heard you got Boatwright and Napier. They're going to put you on their on your back. This is your UConn year.
I don't know about that.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The other weird thing, Vish, that we have to talk about is that the 49ers just got punished by the NFL. Apparently, they made some accounting errors at the end of the 2022 league year. And so they are getting their fourth round pick this year pushed back. It's now, it was going to be 131. Now it's at the end of all the comp picks at the end of the fourth round. I think it's now 135. So that is the thing that's happening. And then next year, they are losing a fifth round pick. So I don't really know the specifics of the mistake. I've tried to learn about it, but Niners did something wrong and they're getting dinged for it.
Yeah, there hasn't been a large elaboration on it, but it's interesting because you don't expect usually large corporations, especially ones that are in the NFL, to make clerical errors that would cause issues like that, because usually they're, you know, hiring the best of the best accounting teams and managing this as well as anybody can manage it. So that's very interesting to me. I'm not exactly sure what's happened, and it's hard to comment on it because we've been given a paragraph of information and that's about it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Niners losing a pick, a fifth round pick, is valuable for this football team. They draft they've historically drafted excellently in that for, in that round, but it's a valuable pick in general. So that was obviously a big deal. The thing that's more intriguing to me is I wonder like how this mistake even happens. And that's kind of what I'm more interested in, right? Because obviously it would be nice to get more information, but based on the information we're given right now, you read clerical error. That's not something you associate with NFL team typically, right? Like that. And how many times have we seen a clerical error pick being taken away recently? Maybe it's happened a lot and I've just been totally unaware of it being happening, but I can't remember a clerical error pick penalty in my lifetime watching the NFL. So it's a bizarre thing. I wonder why. And then on a more lighter and joking matter, we saw a similar kind of thing. Not a similar thing, but we saw an employee make an error yesterday in Kansas, or two Kansas players for the Orlando Magic and the Toronto Raptors exchanged jerseys. The jerseys next to each other had a vulgar thing on it. The Orlando Magic person posted that on social media, but here's where it gets funny, Rob. This is where the punchline of the joke is. I realize that I'm doing a terrible job setting this up, but this is where this actually relates to the 49ers thing. This morning, there was an open position for Orlando Magic social media person online. They were hiring. So my joke would be, this morning, maybe if you're an accountant, the San Francisco 49ers might be looking for somebody in the profession. But All jokes aside, we don't actually know what happened other than the fact that this is a fairly serious thing and pretty bizarre for an NFL team to have.
Melaniac says they must have tried to write off too many Shanahats as business expenses. That's well done. When I first saw the headline that came across on my phone, it was like, bloop, 49ers penalized. I was like, oh, they must have got caught tampering. That was my first thought, because there's so much tampering that's going on with free agency. I was like, well, they must have got dinged. And then I clicked the story and I'm like, accounting error from the end of 2022 league year, not even last year. We're going back 2 years.
And you would think, by the way, I don't know whether this is serious or not. That's what I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
Because when I read they misreported a contract, whether it was an accident or not, to me, that reads as a serious offense. When I look at the penalty, it seems like, this happens. We had to ding him because it happened, but this happens. So that's where I would love a little bit more information than the paragraph, because when you read it, right, like I feel like misreporting a cap number, not saying somebody's proper contract number, is a very serious thing, especially in a salary cap league. And the cap is what regulates people to have parity in this league.
Steven Duckett, YouTube channel member, says Kyle forgot the overtime rule. Now John doesn't know the accounting rule. I mean, I don't know who made the actual mistake, but it doesn't look good for the 49ers. And how did it take this long for it to come out? That's the weird thing. You would think this would have happened a year ago if it was the end of the 2022 league year.
But I would assume it probably maybe takes like a year to probably audit all of like financial statements. Now we're just getting deep into speculation. I'm not even going to assume there. That's a throwaway statement. If somebody wants to say that sounds intelligent, then keep it. If you think it sounded stupid, it was a throwaway statement.
Brett Davis, YouTube channel member, which, by the way, shout out to all our YouTube channel members. Thank you for supporting us. If you want to support the channel, please do. It's less than $3 a month. You get custom emojis, membership badges, priority comment response. It's a great way to support everything that we're doing here. Brett says, not a fifth round pick. Let him have a third round pick, because we all know every 49ers third round pick, except for Fred Warner, has been terrible pretty much. So, I don't know. The penalty is not serious. The league said that the 49ers did not try and get around the salary cap, that they would have remained under the salary cap at all times, regardless of the error. There was no intent to circumvent the cap. 49ers put out a statement that said, we accept the discipline, which who cares if you do or you don't. You don't have to accept the league discipline. It's the discipline is what it is.
Wouldn't there be an appeal process? So I think that's what they're saying when they say that we're not going to appeal it.
I don't know. With this, I have no idea.
Okay.
Like, I have no idea with this kind of a thing. It's also kind of hard to appeal, right? Like, the numbers either add up or they don't, but whatever. But the Niners also said in their statement, at no time did we mislead or otherwise deceive the league or gain a competitive advantage in connection with the payroll mistake.
Yeah, but like you could appeal the penalty though, right?
I don't know.
Like,
you're
saying even because you're right. Like, the mistake is kind of the mistake in this case. It should be pretty black or white for a clerical issue. It should be either the numbers make sense or they don't. But I feel like you can appeal the penalty based on what the Niners, I guess, here are arguing and what the NFL is saying. And that's why it seems that the penalty doesn't seem to match how much gravity, you know, a clerical issue could cause. It's because they didn't end up circumventing the cap in any capacity. So I'm assuming had there been a harsher penalty, maybe they would say we appeal the process because we didn't mean to deceive and it should be a smaller penalty. Is that a possible thought?
I'm looking on ProFootballTalk.com right now. Mike Florio has the write-up on this. The last paragraph is interesting. He says, it's a hell of a punishment for no ill intent, but the rules of the salary cap and player compensation are clear. Any miscalculation results in punishment, since any team that does it on purpose could later claim it was a mistake and avoid punishment. So this could be the kind of thing where it's like, look, we have to put the hammer down on you, because if we don't, everyone's just going to say, whoops, we made a mistake. And I do understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Ian Sharp says, human error, it happens. Brisby Life watching on Twitch. Shout out to the Twitch fam. If this was actually financially audited and then reviewed by the league for some time, it's not crazy for some sort of determination happening now, assuming a 12-31 year end. No, the league year ends in March. So it would be March to March. Is that how that works? But I see your point, Brisby Life.
His point still kind of makes sense. And then going back to the Ian Sharp thing, human error does happen, but it usually never reaches this stage, right? Like, this is a corporation. I'm sure they're double, triple, quadruple checking these numbers before they're getting submitted. This isn't just one opportunity for human error. And I definitely would say this is a bizarre human error to occur, because again, this is not one we have read about or seen occur with the league in general. Like, this auditing error, this is not something that's like, hey, this team had an error with their books, misrepresenting. Like, this doesn't happen as far as I'm aware, at least.
I can't ever remember it happening. And like you said too, it's not like, well, I did the books, I submitted them. Like, no, somebody finishes it, somebody else checks it, maybe a third person checks it. I'm sure they're not adding the numbers up by hand. Also, it's not like someone made it, you know, forgot to carry the two.
They have I'm assuming they're paying millions of dollars to some of the most accomplished people in that field to be doing this job. This is a rich, large corporation. They'll have the best audit team, they'll have the best lawyer team.
Maybe the second best lawyers, audit. Salty Cyclist says it passed any kind of internal audit, which is not good. Yeah, look, it stinks, man. The fourth round pick is now later. They lose the fifth round pick next year. Obviously, none of that is good, but you know, it is what it is. There's nothing we can do about it now. The 49ers will have to adjust. I wonder if there will be any fallout. Will somebody get fired? Maybe we'll have to keep an eye on LinkedIn. Like you said, any 49ers job openings?
Any
maybe.
Niners fan, great accountant, this is your opportunity.
Right. You live in San Francisco area. You're Santa Clara area. There you go. That is your opportunity. All right, Bish. one more topic I wanted to get to on today's show, and that is the Brandon Ayuk trade rumors, or lack thereof. We had heard from Mia O'Brien, who covers the Jags from 1010XL, who said that there was interest between Ayuk and the Jags. We got a little update on that because Mia O'Brien now says the Niners asked the Jags for pick 17 and Zay Jones. And that once that happened, I believe she said the talks fizzled. I think fizzled is the exact word that she used. One, what do you think of the offer or the ask by the 49ers? Two, what do you think of the idea now that it's sort of dead in the water?
Okay, I'm not shocked that it's dead. Because when people were talking about the 17th pick for Brandon Ayuk last week, and I love Brandon Ayuk, I think the 49ers should pay Brandon Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk is not worth the 17th pick in the draft with the contract due. Like that's...
Are you sure?
That's a lot of value for Brandon. I mean, DeForest Buckner went for the 13th pick in the draft. Tyreek Hill went for two picks late in the first round.
AJ Brown went for 17.
22nd.
Was it 22?
Or it was 18th. It was either.
It was 18 plus another pick.
Right. But AJ Brown was more productive at this point in his career.
No, he wasn't.
Than Brandon Ayuk.
No, he had 2,000.
He was a number one. He was a number one wide receiver.
He had 2,000 yard seasons. So does Brandon Ayuk.
He was a number one wide receiver.
So Brandon Ayuk wasn't a number one wide receiver and still had 2,000 yard seasons.
I mean, I guess. Okay. If we're that you got me there because I literally used the word productive. I shouldn't have used the word productive. I should have used better optics, but then we're going to get into something. Okay. Either way, I don't think he's worth the 17th pick in the draft. Diggs, who had 4 years of 800 plus yards of production in a row, went for 22 and a seventh round pick in 2020. Either way, I did not think that was going to be possible, and that's why it fizzled. I didn't think Balky giving Christian Kirk a historically large contract, giving Gabe Davis a large contract, then not giving Ridley a contract, then giving up a first round pick for Brandon Ayuk and giving up all that money for Brandon Ayuk, it didn't seem on brand for him. He's averse to drafting receivers. He's didn't do that in San Francisco. He's never evaluated the receiver position well. So those were the two reasons why that trade necessarily didn't make sense to me, but I understood why Brandon Ayuk was interested in it. Whether he's worth the 17th overall pick, well, we're going to have to argue about that another time because I don't believe he is. You made a compelling argument that he could be, and I'm not 100% sure yet on how I would argue AJ Brown versus Brandon Ayuk. So I don't want to argue that right now, to be fair, because I could lose the argument. But all jokes aside and me talking about that aside, like, I'm not surprised that this entire situation happened. And I ultimately, when I originally saw it, I thought it was Ayuk putting pressure on the 49ers and putting pressure on a deal being happened because that spot makes sense for him because he would be the number one option on the offense. But they recently paid Evan Engram a lot of money. Christian Kirk got an enormous contract in free agency. They just paid Gabe Davis, giving up a first-round pick, and then paying Brandon Ayuk on top of that didn't really seem feasible or make sense to me last week.
So a couple of different things. Apparently, this whole thing came up because the Jags were negotiating with – okay, you got to help me because for some reason in my mind, Calvin Ridley. Mm-hmm. Christian Kirk and Calvin Ridley have blended into one person in my mind, and I don't know why. They were negotiating with Ridley, and Ridley and Ayuk are represented by the same agent or same agency.
Oh.
And so what happened was during the Ridley negotiations, according to Mia O'Brien, she thinks that somebody from Athletes First was like, hey, by the way, we also represent Brandon Ayuk. We may be looking to get him somewhere else. Would you be interested? And the Jags said yes. That's sort of the genesis of this whole thing. So Jacksonville was negotiating with Calvin Ridley at one point. So they were potentially maybe willing to spend some money on a wide receiver.
But then I think Tennessee took Calvin Ridley to a price that went way beyond them. People were originally speculating that Jacksonville was going to pay Calvin Ridley a large sum of money. And that was a part of this. But then, I mean, when you look at the money Calvin Ridley ended up getting, and this brings up a better conversation, I'm assuming this is where you were going to go. Maybe Brandon Ayuk is more worth that money than Calvin Ridley, but if Jacksonville balked on that money and Calvin Ridley got a lot of money, that's where I think it becomes interesting.
Well, okay, so a couple different things. First, I do think partly Balky was like, I don't know if Balky actually would have pulled the trigger. Like, does he really want to give the 49ers, you know, help, essentially? I still think there's probably some ill will there. Do you think that maybe this was the 49ers saying, like, their introductory offer? You know, like how you never accept the first offer. So maybe the 49ers thought, like, ah, they're not going to take this, but we'll ask for this in the beginning so that we could eventually settle on maybe just the 17th overall pick or the 17th overall pick and a fifth round pick or something like that. And maybe the Jags were just like, what? Forget it. And they hung up the phone and the negotiations stopped.
I don't look at it like that. I just think the 49ers aren't desperate to trade Brandon Ayuk right now. And I think once they go through a preliminary negotiation with Brandon Ayuk and they see where that number is and they see how feasible it is for them to get a contract done with Brandon Ayuk, that's when they'll start more seriously negotiating. But I think they're setting this ridiculously high price now because in the case that the contract isn't feasible or in the case that it's close, they want somebody to come in thinking that they have to make a ridiculous offer to get Brandon Ayuk, and they want that offer to be able to pivot off of Brandon Ayuk. So right now, I think the reason the 49ers did this and the reason they negotiated this way is because I don't think they're desperate right now at this point today in the offseason to move Brandon Ayuk. Now, it's a completely fluid situation based on how the negotiation goes. I think they're capable of fully re-signing him. I also think they're capable of trading him, and I think that's going to depend on how the negotiation goes and what gets offered. But I think they're putting out a strong line so that teams think that they have to overpay to acquire the player if they really want him. And they're also setting themselves up for a situation because right now they don't feel like they need to trade the player because they haven't necessarily really started negotiating with the player, and they're not close enough to the draft where they might feel like they need to replace the player because they can't, you know, trade. They won't be able to re-sign him, and in the case that they would have to trade him.
For the record, there's no reason why the 49ers have to wait until the middle of the summer to do their negotiations.
No, no.
I know people are always like, oh, that's what the 49ers do. Yeah, they don't have to do that. They choose to do that. Sometimes
well,
I think
they
choose
to get the deals done then. They start negotiating now, and usually the negotiation now is a little more contentious because I think they try to be really hardbolly to get the number out of the player, and then they try to just wear him out over the course of the offseason and then end up signing him. But I also think they try to get the number out of the player early so that they could make the decision on whether they could actually keep him and make that contract work in a way that makes sense for the player or if they have to move him.
Do you think Ayuk gets an extension this offseason, or do you think the Niners say, you're playing on your fifth-year option, we'll talk to you next year?
You know, I actually, at first I thought he would get the extension. I just felt like it made too much sense. Now I think it all depends on what gets offered for him. Because I think if like the 17th pick is on the table, now Trent Baalke said no. I obviously do not think he's worth the 17th pick. You think he is. Let's say it doesn't matter whether I do or not. Let's say somebody gives up the 14th pick in the draft for Brandon Ayuk. I think the 49ers are walking the 14th pick, walking yes. Brandon Ayuk and drafting somebody with their card like on the spot. So I think that's where it's going to come down to on his trading. I changed my mind on this. Originally, I was very much, I think they're going to sign him unless they get blown away by something. And I guess this is still around that realm. But I guess to some people, the 17th pick in the draft is like very reasonable compensation for Brandon Ayuk. I think Ayuk is a terrific player. And had they not had other players on the book, I think even the 17th pick, then you rethink the situation. But because of where they are, where their roster is, if you get the 17th pick in the draft for Brandon Ayuk, as good as he is, it's just, to me, the fiscally responsible move to move off of him and draft somebody at 17.
I agree. I completely agree. And like nobody wants to see Ayuk out of town, but the further along in this process the 49ers get, the harder the decisions become. And this is one of the hard decisions. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, the 17th pick, he's not worth it. If I told you it was A.J. Jenkins, would you trade Brandon Ayuk for A.J. Jenkins? Of course you would. Once you put a name to that first round pick, it becomes so much less valuable.
Right.
People like cherish these picks. I mean, hell, the 49ers just gave up three of them and they made the NFC championship game every year that they were gone.
But that's where people are missing it, right? You're not trading at that point. You're not trading for what the money is going to buy you. You're trading for money. You're trading for an asset, right? Like, for example, Rob, if you have a diamond and I have this water bottle, I give you this water bottle for a diamond. If I go trade the diamond in for nothing, it doesn't mean that the water bottle and the diamond are now are worth nothing. It means that I did a stupid thing with the diamond, but you gave me a diamond for the water bottle. So if you trade Brandon Ayuk for a first-round pick, you're getting a first-round pick. That's a valuable thing. If you flush the third first-round pick down the drain for AJ Jenkins, that doesn't mean the first-round pick wasn't valuable. That means you took a valuable thing and did a stupid thing with it.
But here's the problem with that analogy. You could just hang on to the diamond in that analogy, and then you're good. You can't do that in this analogy. Well, you have to spend that first round pick. So that's
there's no guarantee you have to take a player at 17. You can use that first round pick, move down a little bit, get three more picks. There's a lot of different ways that that diamond can be spent.
But those
in
are
a way
still
that can
gambles
be helpful to your team. Sure.
Those are gambles too. So
at the end of the day, yes. I mean, the entire draft is a gamble. But if we're talking about draft picks as assets, they can be used in a lot of different ways. In fact, a draft pick can be used to trade for another player. So you're not trading for one individual thing that happens with the draft pick when you're trading Brandon Ayuk for a draft pick. You're trading for a realm of possibilities with a valuable commodity, which is the 17th pick that we're using as the operative use case in this
example. I still think they're way overvalued. Draft picks are way overvalued. Most of them stink. Even in the first round, most of them stink.
No, I don't think it's the value of whether the player is going to be good or not, Rob. I think you're totally missing the point there. It's not about whether the player is going to be good. It's in a salary-capped league, the way they've negotiated contracts with the players' union, you can get a possibly high commodity, highly valuable asset for a cost-controlled five-year operation. That's what you're trading for in the NFL. You're right. The draft is a total crapshoot. Half of them stink. Half of them don't. Half of them that you think are going to stink turn out to be great. Half of them that you think are going to be stink are actually going to stink. There's no way of saying what actually happens in the draft. It's just the pick is so valuable because in the salary cap league, the most valuable thing is in at any position, we talk about it at quarterback, at any position is to have any player under the rookie wage scale because it's cost controlled. You don't have to negotiate with them for a certain point, and everything about their salary is set into your cap for 5 years, which is invaluable in the NFL, more valuable than negotiating any contract, in fact, with one of these veteran players.
But I still think they're overvalued. Even before the rookie wage scale came in 2011, I still think that people overvalue draft. Every team thinks that, like, you know, they're going to pick the guy, right? They got the system, the blackjack system that's going to win. To me, I would be so much more willing, if I'm going to make a trade involving a draft pick, give me the known commodity, especially at the NFL. I say that all the time, too, with, like, these prospect trades in baseball. Oh, you trade one guy for four prospects. 9 times out of 10, the team that gets the one guy ends up winning that deal because all these prospects, all these draft picks are gambles. You just don't know.
So in baseball and basketball, I feel like you're right, but I don't feel like that in football. Like, I think about the large trades in my lifetime, the Trey Lance trade, the Robert Griffin trade, the Laremy Tunsil trade, the Deshaun Watson trade, like the Tavon Austin when they moved up for Tavon Austin. Like, all these trades, the Carson Wentz trade, the Jared Goff trade, all these trades that involve the movement of multiple first round picks. I feel like, I guess in some of the examples that I just gave, and I'm realizing they traded draft picks for another unknown commodity. So let's stick with Tunsil and Watson in this case. I feel like who ends up getting the draft picks in both of those cases ultimately ended up succeeding. Now, those were, especially in Tunsil's case, it was like an out disproportionate amount of draft picks for a left tackle, especially like we'd seen nothing like that in terms of movement. So it's way more nuanced than what I'm describing. But I think in the NFL, it's more 50-50 because I feel like the NFL in general, a player producing in one place isn't as much a guarantee as, like, I feel like if in the NBA, if I'm a good point guard, yes, system matters. Yes, who I play with matters. But I have enough control of the game bringing the ball up the court that I can be good in Portland and I can be great in Detroit, right? Like, you can still be a good, like, it translates much better. In the NFL, I feel like, because of all the different systems, all the different ways people play, the way you're used and all of those things, I think it's a risk even with veteran players too. I'm talking about the level below star players, like with veteran players, but I do think it's a risk with them too, because I think, like, there's no guarantee that those kinds of players are going to succeed. I think that's why so many free agents flop. It's not that those free agent players didn't earn their contract. They were given a contract because they earned it up to a certain point. It's that it's very difficult to take what succeeds in one place in the NFL and get it to work exactly like that in another place.
No, I think most free agents don't work out. It's because you don't reach free agency unless you have some warts on you. The way the system is in the NFL, there's not really that many good, really good players that reach free agency. But like, look at the DeForest Buckner trade, right? Mm-hmm. Who won that deal? The Colts by a mile. Why? Because they got the proven commodity. Think of even the Emmanuel Sanders trade that the Niners mm-hmm. made, right? Who won that trade? We don't even know who they picked with the other two picks. Why? Because those guys sucked. That's my point. There's so many deals.
Well, no,
like
no.
That.
Actually, you can't say that. You can't say that. Because if they got a starter from a third-round pick for Emmanuel Sanders and the Niners got Emmanuel Sanders for 8 games...
But the fact that we
no, but you only a Niners fan would look at that and say those 10 games of Emmanuel Sanders, his locker room impact, blah, 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 was meaningful to go to the Super Bowl. Everybody else would look at the Broncos got a 4-year starter in the third round. Now, I don't know what it actually went for, and that's why this is a terrible argument on my part. But at the same time, I don't think that it doesn't matter. That's what I'm arguing. It's not that it doesn't matter who it went for, because if they got a starting player out of it, they won the trade.
I don't think so.
Now, you could say the Niners didn't lose the trade because they didn't maybe need that third-round pick at that point, but the Broncos wouldn't have lost that trade. No way.
Denver got McTelvin Agum, defensive tackle out of Arkansas. And let's see if they did anything with the fourth-round pick. I'm trying to see. Trying to look it up really quickly.
It was the fourth the next year, right?
It was a third and fourth-round pick in 2020. That's what it was.
COVID draft.
I'm trying to see who the second pick was. McTelvin Agum, and I think maybe they traded it. I'm not sure what they did with the second pick.
Here we go. Get me all of those players.
The point of it is we don't even know who they took with the second pick. So the Niners won that trade.
But
9 times out of 10.
We don't follow the Broncos.
If I can't even see who it was and we don't know it off the top of our heads, Vish, we follow the NFL, do we not?
Yeah, but I feel like there's trades that I feel like the Niners have traded a player that we look at as like good trades for the Niners. And I think the other team might look at it as a good trade for them too.
I think we remember the trade. What do we always say, right? Oh, the Vikings traded Stephon Diggs. Who'd they get? Justin Jefferson. We remember when the pick works out.
Yeah,
we
but
don't
that's
remember
that's,
when it doesn't.
Stephon Diggs and Emmanuel Sanders were not traded for the same things at the same point.
Right. But my point is,
like, we don't know who Atlanta took with the second round pick they got for Mo Sanu, for example.
But
and
my point
Mo Sanu was a complete bust for New England.
Yeah, well, Mo Sanu is not good. But my point is, when you trade a proven guy for a pick and the pick works out, we remember those deals because I think it's the more rare occurrence.
The player selected after, according to M. Patel, Legarius Sneed in the 2024 round. Is this right?
The player selected after who? McTelvin?
Oh,
whoever?
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed his immediate comment. He said Denver traded the fourth round pick to the Jags, and the player selected after was Legarius Sneed in the 2024 round.
Okay. But Denver
Randall's
didn't pick
asking,
him.
Randall's asking who won the Russell Wilson trade with Seattle.
Yeah, look, there are examples on both sides. Funny. Of course there are examples on both sides. Like, the NFL's been in business long enough. Like I said, the Vikings overwhelmingly won the Stephon Diggs trade. And Stephon Diggs is really, really good. And Minnesota still won the trade because Justin Jefferson is, like, the best receiver in the league.
Well, no, with the Russell Wilson trade, I don't know that we can say that Seattle won the trade yet. Because the biggest mistake Denver did wasn't even the trade. It was the contract that they gave subsequently to Russell Wilson.
True.
And it's not like Seattle has done anything more that they weren't doing without Russell Wilson. So you can't really call them a winner other than they don't have Russell Wilson on the books anymore, right? So it's a weird one, definitely, for sure. I definitely think, like, us discussing this topic, I think a lot of people are going to look for, like, hey, this is the correct side. I think it's a way more nuanced discussion than there's a one right or a one wrong. There's a lot of different ways to skin a cat, and I think this is a great example of why different teams choose to operate in different ways in the NFL. Philosophically, these conversations are probably ones that teams are constantly having. Hey, how much is this player worth? How much is this draft pick worth? Hey, mm-hmm. who can we take in this draft? Like, this is value proposition questions that are constantly asked. They are often open-ended. They don't necessarily often have a right or wrong answer. I think it's mostly situational, and that's what we're learning. Even all of these examples we're throwing out, sure, there's a situation where that you know, supports my point. There's a situation that supports your point. There's a situation that doesn't support either of our points. There's a situation that kind of supports both of our points. There's examples of all of that in the NFL, but philosophically, these questions are rather open-ended because it's constantly different on what is the norm on what people are doing.
Nope, I'm right. You're wrong. There's no room for nuance anywhere in any discussion about sports.
Dang. Well, no, I don't know if that's the kind of attitude that's going to get you to the Elite Eight, man.
Yeah, that's true. One more little comment here before we go. Did you see what Leonard Floyd said with why he signed with the 49ers? He said, quote, "I had quite a few offers. The Niners didn't BS around. They came in with a great deal out of the gate. They showed that they wanted me from the jump. So once I saw that, I'm like, shoot, I want y'all too. So I'm on the way." I don't know much about Leonard Floyd. I heard the press conference today. I'm like, I love this guy.
Yeah, he's a stud. He's a stud. But I'm not shocked by this because I feel like when he got cut last year, and I thought he got cut at kind of a weird time, I thought that there would be more teams like kind of in on him. I didn't think he signed for a lot of money to Buffalo. In fact, I wanted the Niners to really sign him at the time. At the time, a lot of us were thinking, nah, they're in on Drake Jackson. Do they want to put a guy in front of Drake Jackson? Leonard Floyd and his 10 and a half sacks would have been mighty productive in front of Drake Jackson for them last year. And mm-hmm. I have a feeling with him, given where his age is, 31, 32, teams would have been like lukewarm, hovering around his market because I'm sure he's a player that contenders would have wanted, but they would have felt like, okay, as his market keeps dwindling, we can get him for a little bit cheaper, a little bit cheaper, a little bit cheaper. And what I'm interpreting from him saying the Niners didn't mess around is the Niners identified his value. They knew they would have wanted him, but they didn't want to play this game with these other teams. And they gave him a contract that would make him come to the 49ers. And that's good negotiation when you're coveting a player.
Absolutely great work by the 49ers. By the way, Leonard Floyd, I believe, is going to make $12 million this year from the 49ers. Chase mm-hmm. Young got $13 million from the Saints to sign there. That is an amazing win for the 49ers because Leonard Floyd is 10 times more productive than Chase Young has ever been in his career.
More consistent, more healthy. And then I think that it does help that like Leonard Floyd and Brandon Staley seem to have this connection mm-hmm. And relationship. Brandon Staley was his linebackers coach when he was drafted. Or not when he was drafted with the Bears, but when he was with the Bears. And then he signed him and like really turned his career around with the Rams. That first year, Brandon Staley was the defensive coordinator, was like Leonard Floyd's like breakout year after being the eighth pick from Georgia. So I think that like kind of works perfectly for them.
It's interesting, Vish. They signed Leonard Floyd, who you mentioned has all that experience with Staley. They wanted Eric Kendricks, also had experience mm-hmm. with Staley. Now that didn't work out. But it's interesting that Staley's kind of getting his guys there.
It is.
Pretty impactful for a guy that's not the defensive coordinator.
What's more interesting to me is that he is getting his guys, because I speculated often that one of their big just annoyances with Wilkes was that Wilkes really put his foot down for Isaiah Oliver. They handed him guaranteed money, and they felt like they were having their foots in their ass in terms of the nickel position for the entire year, right? Like, you don't give a guy $2.5 million fully guaranteed in free agency for him to be playing in the fourth quarter of the third preseason game. Like, that's disproportionate math. It doesn't usually work like that. That's not business you're trying to do. Now, that's the inevitable outcome to things going right and wrong, but mm-hmm. that's not business you're trying to do. And I thought it always set Wilkes off on the wrong foot, especially because Wilkes, that entire offseason, was so convinced Oliver was the guy and kept telling us Oliver was the guy. And Shanahan was like, whoa, he might not even make this team
yep.
at one point. So there was that disconnect as well. And I always thought it set him back. And it's interesting to me that the signings early in free agency on defense feel very Brandon Staley-ish in terms of the schematics. I like you bring up Leonard Floyd as like a great fit. In terms of like the ideal end player for their four down front, Chase Young fits the physical checkboxes. Leonard Floyd is much more productive, but he is tad undersized to be a three down edge player in a four down front.
I don't think he's going to be a three down player.
Chase Young proved he couldn't be one either because they didn't want him to be. They had Cleveland Furrow playing, but I'm just saying from like a just checking the boxes standpoint of prototypical size,
right.
Chase Young's more prototypical for their scheme than Leonard Floyd. So it goes to show that there are going to be some wholesale changes to this scheme coming.
definitely
not
one of the
wholesale, but smaller. Yeah,
definitely one of the things I'm going to have an eye on once we get into the preseason is like just what do they look like exactly? What are they doing? How are they different? Nick Ellert, YouTube channel member, says, isn't it more weird that players have not been deterred by Brandon Staley? Maybe he wasn't as bad as we thought. You know, Brandon Staley's record with the Chargers, he was like 500. It wasn't like he, you know, like they were awful. He wasn't 4-12 every year. And again, he's not the head coach. He's going to be helping on the defensive side of the football. Brandon Staley can do that. Like, we know he's a bright defensive mind. So, you know, I think people think of Brandon Staley, the head coach, and how the Chargers always charger at the end of games. He is viewed very differently than I think the public views him.
I think that's the point, right? I think people think that NFL players are also burner account commenting on Twitter people too. They don't care if funny guy on Twitter is making fun of Brandon Staley and memeing him for his fourth down decisions and whatever. It's like, they don't care about that. Brandon Staley is brought in to do a job. They're brought in to do a job. What do you mean get deterred by Brandon Staley? In what work, like tomorrow in your workplace, Rob, or let's say at Gold Standard Podcast, let's say, because like let's say Gold Standard Podcast is the company, you kind of run the company, right? You hired somebody that has a terrible reputation in media somewhere else. Doesn't mean that it's going to affect me doing my work with you. That has nothing to do with me and you doing under review. I feel like so many people take the personal elements of the sports, and I don't know where it comes from. I think it's like experiences that you experience as a kid or whatever, and disassociate sports from our own professional experiences. And I think people, like, we work with people we don't like all the time in professions, all the time. We work with people who have different reputations.
Yep.
All the time. We have to figure out how to deal with them directly to us. So I don't know how they could have ever been deterred by Brandon Staley. Once he was hired to do the job, it's like, okay, he's one of us. We got to do the job together.
Yeah, it is a job. Like, yeah, it's a game, and it's different from our workplaces in some ways, but in some ways it's not. Like, it is a job. You be a professional. You go, you show up, you handle your business, and then you leave for the day. And if you're Jimmy Garoppolo, you don't look at your phone again until you're back in the facility. You know,
well, now he's going to be texting McVay all the time. Him and McVay are going to be in Cabo. Kyle's going to go to Cabo, and he's going to see Jimmy, McVay, and Stafford in the just hanging out together.
That was the weirdest move ever. When my phone went bloop and said Jimmy Garoppolo signs with, I was like, oh, let's see, who's this going to be? And then it said Sean McVay and the Rams. I was like, damn, did not see that coming.
What was it about? Like, what is their net gain of getting Garoppolo? I thought they were going to go all young quarterback this offseason.
I don't know.
Stafford.
I have no idea. How could you, as Sean McVay, have a front row seat to the Jimmy Garoppolo show and think, that's the guy I got to have for my backup quarterback?
Stunned. As a backup, if you remove the injuries and the one game suspension, like, I guess he's fine as a backup. But the injuries is like a big part of like why he wouldn't be fine as a backup. But I don't mind it as much for him to be a backup. I'm not going to lie. I don't mind that move for him to be a backup. But from like roster standpoint, now, especially that Aaron Donald is gone, it feels like they're all in, but they're kind of all in again without Aaron Donald, who would be like one of the two reasons why they should be all in. It's their roster is in a weird spot to me all of a sudden with Aaron Donald gone, them being all in, them having Garoppolo. I thought they would try and get a young quarterback and get him behind Stafford this year.
The Donald retirement is a huge loss for them.
Oh,
huge.
It's the biggest. Yeah, he was unreal last year. That's why their defense, their rebuilding defense, was half decent last year, because number 99 is still
just wrecking plays. Like, he was still so good. They couldn't run plays in practice. He was destroying practices because he was dominating everybody. And they were like, dude, we can't get anything done. You have to stop this. It's just unbelievable. Top five defensive player of all time for me. Maybe top three. He's that damn good.
It's him, LT, Reggie White, then? Would that be your three?
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Him, LT, Reggie White. I'm trying to think, should I put like a Ronnie Lott or a Deion in there?
Yeah.
I think, those are the three, I think. Like, that's the level that he is
at.
Yeah.
No, he's, I mean, when you're talking 8 first-team All-Pros in 10 years.
He's 32 years old. He has 8 All Pros and 3 Defensive Player of the Year awards, and he's only 32.
Do you think this is like a Brady retirement?
I've been thinking that. Mike Florio has been talking about how, like, basically he quote unquote retired kind of privately to the, like, he told the Rams he was retiring. I think he even filed the retirement paperwork at one point. And
right.
Then,
I saw that the Rams said they weren't surprised and they were like fully prepared this offseason, that whatever that means. Right.
Yeah. Like, they're always going to say that. But he did this before, and then he got the raise to $30 million a year. And then he was like, oh, no, I'm coming back. So Florio has kind of floated out like, maybe does he want another raise from the Rams? We'll see. I mean, he is only 32 and he's still just as good. But right. If I'm him, I'm like, I got my ring. I got 3 Defensive Player of the Year awards. We're probably not going to win the Super Bowl next year. I think I'm good. Like, I totally get that if that's him.
I don't look at it that way at all. I look at the exact opposite, actually, as you. That's why I'm struggling to understand it. And that's why I think, like, okay, maybe this is a guy whose body, it's either two things for me. Either his body is just not feeling it anymore. Like, it's not like a lot of people look for one big injury. Sometimes it's just an accumulation and it's one injury nobody knows of. Like, his knee might have been he might have knee issues or something like that. Maybe it's that. Otherwise, Rob, it could be maybe a financial thing like you're talking about. But the Rams rebuilt this entire thing. They now have a young, decent offensive line. They have Stafford, who they still got a shot with. They have 2 receivers with Cooper Kupp coming back healthy. Puka's good. Kyron Williams is a stud. They have a running game now with McVay. And realistically, theoretically, they just signed Cam Curl, Darius Williams. Like, they're theoretically building up their defense again. And they went to the playoffs last year. Like, I think if you're Aaron Donald, with you on the field, you got to feel like you have a shot of adding to your legacy this year. I thought the Rams' moves felt kind of all in. And that's why I'm so confused why he retired. Because if he retires, I don't feel like the Rams should be all in. Because I think being all in is the fact that he increases your chance to win by so much because he's so good that you can win a Super Bowl any year. And then if they're going all in like this, I feel like, well, if he gets a couple more playoff wins, because you talked about his legacy isn't just that he is a great player or he's an all-time great. His legacy is amongst names in the NFL that are considered to be like the best ever. Like, you talked about, like, the sanction of like 3 greatest defensive players of all time, like Reggie White, Lawrence Taylor. These are some of the most iconic names in the NFL. And we're talking about Aaron Donald and that lore. Mm-hmm. Those type of guys, psychologically, the way we've always seen them, they're way too obsessed. Jerry Rice, obsessed to the max. Bob, look at Bobby Wagner right now. Tom Brady, these guys, they're so obsessed about this type of thing. They're crazy obsessed. They don't get contented. That's why they continue achieving while already being exponentially greater than their peers. And that's where I feel like he's got another good shot, because his legacy is like, if they win another one with him, like, you're already talking about him with Reggie White and Lawrence Taylor. If he gets another Super Bowl to his resume,
it doesn't work like that for defensive tackles. That's a quarterback thing. And
you don't think so?
Yes, I do, because nobody cares how many Super Bowls Lawrence Taylor or Reggie White have. That's not why they're considered great.
But I think it would matter if they didn't have one, right? Like, Bruce Smith has 200.5 sacks, right? And mm-hmm. Bruce Smith was a great player, but Bruce Smith's conversation never gets in with these other top defensive ends because they didn't win one. And I think it does help to the legacy of how people talk about you. I think the Super Bowl does help. I think it gives certain players a boost to their legacy for sure.
Yes, but he has one. And so getting 2, I don't think adds that much.
He's in a conversation with a guy who won NFL MVP and he won 2. And the thing with Donald is, you could argue the one that he won, he was the driving force, right? Like, I feel like he should have won Super Bowl MVP of that game. He made the plays in the second half to win them that game. And when he's in a conversation with that guy, because he's really in a – he's not – like, Rob, he's not comparing himself with Chris Jones or comparing himself with DeForest Buckner or Eric Armstead. He's solely comparing himself with Reggie White and Lawrence Taylor and those type of guys. And so I think, in my opinion, it could matter. Maybe he just doesn't care. Maybe, like, I don't know anything about Aaron Donald. I'm just speculating that he has an obsessive personality to achieve what he has. Maybe he doesn't care.
Well, that was going to be my next point. He just might not care. Like, don't just think that just because he's as good as he is and as productive as he is, that he also has that. That's why those guys are so rare, because a lot of times you get the guys that just love the game, but they're not necessarily the most talented. A lot of times the most talented guys, things have always come so easy for them that they don't have that kind of psychotic work ethic. But when you get that work ethic and motivation with the incredible skills, that's how you get the Jerry Rice, the Tom Brady, the Peyton Manning, that kind of thing. And I don't know what Aaron Donald is, whether he is or he isn't, but you can't assume that just because he's really good that he has that.
Right, right. That's fair. That's for sure fair. It's interesting to me, though, because like I thought when I saw what they did this offseason, I thought, man, the Rams are putting together a team. I saw he retired. It's like, man, the Rams are not a threat anymore.
That's what Michelle said. She said the same thing on Friday. She was like, well, that's that, because I've been kind of talking up the Rams this offseason. They're still going to be good because they still have an offense. Stafford is good. They have a running game. They have McVay. Like, they're going to be in games. They might have to win some more shootouts this year.
Oh, 100%. But they'll only be as good as they were last year. That's how I view them. Like a team that could make the playoffs, a wild card team that's competitive because they have a good quarterback and a great coach, and they can run the ball. With the team that they currently have on paper, and we're 2 weeks into March, so it doesn't matter in terms of 2024. We are very early in the speculation. But with the team they currently have on paper today, and you throw Aaron Donald in there, to me, they would have elevated themselves from the group that, okay, they can be one of the seven playoff teams in a conference to they can legitimately win a conference. And that's how much of a difference I think Donald ultimately makes. And that's why it's so weird for me, the mental gymnastics that went down last week. Because I went from like really thinking like, wow, they've made some excellent moves. And it's interesting to me how McVay has gone with this bigger offensive line, paying money for Joe Jackson. And having Steve Avila, who they drafted last year, and then paying Kevin Dotson and extending him earlier this offseason to, well, yeah, they have all of these things that's interesting, but yeah, I don't care. Like, they don't have Aaron Donald.
It's a damn shame, isn't it? Good luck, Aaron Donald. Enjoy your retirement. God knows you've earned it. Hopefully
Donald, if you want anything to do on retirement, if there's any way you want to spend Sundays not thinking of the NFL, well, I was going to offer you to watch the games with me, but I guess that wouldn't be that fun for you. You might go back to the Rams in that case. So find whatever activity is the most fun thing for you and do that.
How'd you like Sunday. Play next to Javon Hargrave. How about that? Anyway, that's going to do it for this edition.
Oh, that's a good one. You got $30 million for him?
We'll find it. Again, everybody, please go to goldstandardniners.com to vote in 49ers Media Madness. Pick your favorite 49ers media member. There's the bracket on screen if you're watching on the stream. Goldstandardniners.com. Go and vote. First round lasts for 3 days, today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. Second round begins on Thursday. We look forward to it. Vish, thank you very much for going to work and squeezing in the show today. I really appreciate it. What else you got going on the rest of the week? You going to be streaming with anybody else?
Yeah, tomorrow it'll be me and Larry Kruger. Thursday, it'll be myself, Jesse, and Larry. Wednesday, I won't be streaming. And then next Monday, it'll be you and me back to talk about the Niners, baby. I like the new sweatshirt you got, by the way. I've been noticing it. The red looked good. I wanted to mention it to you. Didn't really find a good time in the show to compliment you. Sometimes I feel like it gasses your head too much, so I try to keep the compliments few and far between to you, but the red looks real good. You look good today.
Thank you. You know, I've been told red is my color. This is the homage 49ers hoodie, by the way. If you want it, click the link. There's a link right in the description of the episode. It'll take you right to the 49ers page. Please use that link because we get commission if you use the link. So if you want to support us, hit the link in the description. It'll take you right to the page. You can order it. I love it. You've seen me wear it many times. It's comfortable. It's warm. It's held up now. I wear this thing, you know, once a week, every single week. It still looks and feels fabulous, as Vish could attest, because he didn't even know any of that stuff. And yet here we are. So
I could see it all from the way you were wearing it, your body language, your demeanor. Those are the adjectives I was thinking for the sweatshirt.
Absolutely. It all comes from the sweatshirt. None of it comes from me. Anyway, thank you, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, and we'll talk soon.